All right, let's go ahead and get the actual meeting started. I'll do a quick roll call. Myself, Kyle's here. See, Tim is here. Alan is here. Simone is here. Jason. Derek. Joe is here. Kim is here now.
Yep.
And Mike is here. So the only person we're missing is Ruben. Great. We knew he wouldn't be here. Welcome, everyone. Can you guys hear us okay on that end over there? Thumbs up from someone. Audio, good? Okay. Joe says good. Okay. Let's do an approval of the meeting minutes from last meeting. As Amber wrote them up, is there any amendments or anything anyone wanted added?
Actually, I do have a quick question.
Okay.
I still seem to be having an issue with my email. I do not know whether I heard you have sent me anything. You were not at the last meeting, but I have no idea whether or not you sent me an email. So if you tell me you sent me an excuse, I will take your big value.
I did. Yeah, you get something back. But, you know, if I type your email address in, I can send you an email. If I reply to you, it doesn't go through.
That's so weird.
Isn't that weird?
Mysteries of the internet.
I'm moved that we accept the bid.
Second.
Second.
Okay. All favor.
Here.
Nice. Okay. Moving on. So we are going to be, I don't know if you guys heard on the other end there, but Jessica's unable to make it to finish up our discussion on construction and demolition. So we are just going to move ahead to number 3 on our agenda item. And it's pretty much our only one on the agenda today is operations and existing conditions with JRMA.
Hey, everyone. My name is Doug Drennan. I've met some of you, but I know there's some new members there. I'm the technical manager for the regional system study that's been underway. We finished the phase 1 report. We're working on phase 2, and we're starting to work with the county on the solid waste management plan. I've been my cohort Kevin McCarthy would normally do this, but he's on vacation, so I'm filling in for him. But what I have today is a presentation to give you information on the existing conditions of the transfer station system. It's the first part of this chapter that will lead then into the needs and opportunities and then finally the options and facility improvements. So this is just the first part of that chapter. So I'm going to share my screen here and hope everybody can see it.
Yeah.
Everybody good?
Good.
Good.
Okay. So let me give you a little background. As most of you may know, we've been working with the county and with CRC for the last 2 years. On doing the regional system study. So this background existing conditions will incorporate some of our findings from that because we did full assessments of the operational conditions and the physical conditions of the facilities. In addition, though, we've updated our data to consider, you know, what the latest information is, and that's part of this presentation. So the purpose today is to review the physical conditions and operation conditions of the transfer station system, answer any questions you have on this first part. The agenda will do a background, a little bit overview of the system, which gives you not only an understanding of the physical considerations, but also the institutional arrangements that's involved with the contract with the county, and that provides information that you need to be aware of. And then we'll go through each of the three transfer stations one by one and tell you what current operations are, current conditions, and then give you a summary. Any questions?
Sounds good.
All right. So an overview of the system. Most of you may know this, but it's since we're updating the solid waste plan, a lot of this stuff will be incorporated. The system was started in 1990 when a 20-year agreement with Columbia Resource Company was signed. That's a wholly subsidiary of Waste Connections Incorporated. Its purpose is to provide the services to transport and dispose of the waste and also own and operate the transfer stations. In the original agreement, the West Van Transfer Station and the Central Transfer Station were the two primary facilities in operation. In 1906, a new contract was negotiated with a 10-year term, so it kind of replaced the original agreement. It didn't quite reach its termination, and there are two extensions and options to the purchase. The instigator of all these changes was the need to build the East Transfer Station, which was part of an agreement in 2006. It opened in 2009. And then also part of that agreement was to install and update the equipment at the material recovery facility at West Van. Those were the principal capital investments that were brought into the contract, as well as the operating conditions. The first contract amendment extension occurred in 2016 to 2021. And one of the conditions of that was to make certain improvements at the CTR station. One of them was to improve the entrance, which was completed recently. As part of the agreement before the second extension, the county was notified CRC of their intent to extend the contract beyond the 2026 date, which was part of the second year option. And so they began that contract negotiations and developed a memorandum of understanding, which led to a prolonged or I should say led to the current situation of negotiating the contract. And at the request of the city, the county extended the current contract for another year. And in order to facilitate timeline for extending that long-term contract. So the contract amendment now for the second 5 year goes from, it says 12/1/23, it was 12/1/22 actually, to 27. The contract extension for notifying of purchase of the site was extended to 2028, January 28. The city of Washougal still retains the right to exercise purchase of the East Transfer Station after the 2019, provided they pay for whatever remaining amortized value is on the books. That's expected to be fully depreciated in 2029, at which time I think the purchase price would fall into that dollar category. So right now, all these terms are the background. But be aware, the county is currently negotiating for a new operating contract for the long term. The conditions of those have not been divulged. They're still in that negotiation. So these conditions, as of now, still exist. I know that's a little complex because putting it together, we had to change and make sure the dates are right. But is there any questions on this?
Do you know when that contract will be completed? I guess in the end.
We're at the point of couple stage negotiation. Okay. I would say that that negotiations are proceeding very well at the moment, but it is getting to be a bit of a knuckle biter because time is drawing nigh. And that's really about all I can say right now. We had a very productive session today. And we're looking hard at all of our calendars, expand, the amount of time that we're in the room together, to work through the details.
Thanks.
Okay. So I'll move on to, the next item, which is,
Kim has a question.
All right, Kim.
Hey, So I just want to make sure I got my facts correct. So the last time this went out for an RFP was what date?
There has not been a market test of this contract since the first time it was let.
And that date would be when? Sorry, it's kind of hard to hear.
1990 or 92, Doug, straighten me out.
Yeah, the original contract, to my knowledge, was issued and negotiated in 1990.
Okay. And then, okay. I'll pause further questions.
Okay. All right, so an overview of the system. Okay, when it first opened up, the first thing they did was open up the transfer station West Van and the CTR, Central Transfer Station, that's located off Highway 503, were expanded and completed. Since that time, in 1992, the population in the county has increased by over 100%. More importantly, since 1993, the waste volumes received have increased from, I can't see the number because everybody's, but it's 173,000, I believe, to over 400,000. So, and then basically there's been no improvements to these facilities other than opening up the Washougal Transfer Station, meaning I don't want to say there's been no physical, large physical additions. Certainly, our observation of the operations, Columbia Resources has been able to adapt and make these facilities work amongst adding all these new services. But, now we'll look at what the physical condition is to handle these. To give you a kind of a perspective, the location of the three transfer stations are shown here. The map here is showing some estimated service areas for each of these transfer stations based on general drive time to them. As you can see, there's some overlap depending on where the drivers are. And actually, depending on what day of the week, the general public can use these facilities from any of these locations, depending on if the facility is available. More importantly to notice is there's been a lot of expansion and growth in the county. Clark County, based on the 2020 census data, was the fastest growing county in the state. So it grew over almost 2% a year. Most of that growth now is occurring in this crosshatch area, or projected to go there, where the North County is expected to double in population between Battleground and Ridgeville, and the areas that are crosshatch that are kind of serviced by, two or the facilities at one time is where all the growth is going to occur. Where that waste will flow is still an estimate, but I just wanted you to get this perspective as we talk through this.
It's expected to double within what time frame?
In the next 15 years.
Thank you.
One other question, Doug. Do we have an idea right now what percentage each transfer facility takes in terms of our total amounts?
Yeah, we're going to cover that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So West Van and Recycling Station was the primary facility. This is the layout of the facility. You can see my toggle, right? My arrow?
Yep.
All right. So all vehicles come and enter through this two, there's two scales. The Waste Connections is adding a third scale here for the haulers. All of the traffic comes in and enters the building. The commercial dump in here and the public dump over here. We'll look at a little closer at that. At this facility, also the public can use the recycling drop-off station, and there is an HHW, Household Hazardous Waste facility. All of the primary circulation is in this area for customer traffic. The transfer trucks will pull around back in and load in the compactor. And then once they're loaded, they're transported to down this road, the service road, to the barge loading facility. The facility receives quite a bit of yard waste that's stored in the back and then is brought in and chipped. And then that's transferred to Dirt Huggers, a compost site across from the Dalles on the located in the river in Washington. Like I said, all the material come here goes down and barge to Finley Buttes. So an overview of it is that it serves the greater Vancouver area. It's located on 21 acres, but you know, the back acreage is limited in use because of its location and its proximity to potential flooding. It's a lower elevation. All waste is compacted and transported to the barge dock. It receives 30% of all the waste generated in the county. And that 30% seems to hold true for the last few years. It hasn't grown. The amount of waste handled did, but it still remains about 30% of the waste. So it's handling about 400 to 425 tons a day. It's open for the cell haul every day except Sunday. It offers recycling drop-off for customers to drop off source-separate recyclables. And the HHW facility is open, I think, only a couple days a week. It's not open every day, but it is there for service. The material recovery facility, the MRF, processes all the commingled recycles from both residential and commercial customers. That's about 250 tons a day. So that's what is coming on into the facility. Show you this operating floor just to give you an example. The facility has five bays on this south wall where the public dump, which they need to use these 8 to 10 stalls, except under the current conditions, this stall one is all used now for receiving the food waste, yard waste mixture from the city. That material needs to be stored in a building, and this is the only location it can be. So I think it's somewhere between 80 and 100 tons a day come in there, or a week, I'm sorry. And that stuff has got to be, this bay can't be used by the public. And on the off hours, CRC drives in a truck, a trailer, and they top load it, and it's hauled to Dirt Huggers, where they handle the wood waste, yard waste for composting. So that program, as it gets bigger, is going to need more space. What happens now is we only have Bay 2, 3, and 4, which are open for the public. They can dump out of Bay 5 as long as the HHW is not open. So this is a very restricted area, and all the waste that is generated is stored here, and the operator, you know, will handle that surge and mix it with the MSW to load out. So there's not enough stalls under this condition to continue to handle the amount of public traffic, which we'll show in a minute. The commercial haulers, there's six bays on the east wall, and this first bay is used, but the three primary bays for hauling and backing in trucks is 7, 8, 9. And those are plenty of stalls to do, but again, garbage is piled in this area, and this is a very confined space. Bays 11 and 12, or 10 and 11, excuse me, are where the recycle trucks back up, and they'll dump in here. That material's pushed back to be fed onto the equipment, and it's processed. And there's two balers where these bales are made, and there's a very limited area for bale storage here. In fact, if we go back to the site, CRC, because of the number of bales and the amount of material, actually uses this temporary location, this covered area for storing bales. So right now, as our current knowledge is that CRC and the county have come to an agreement to try to remove this and relocate the MRF to a new site. If that occurs in the next 5 years, all of this space will become available to expand operations. Little history, we did go back and look 20 years. It's not necessary, just looking between 2016 and 2021. The cash customers coming to the facility the amount of waste brought by the cash customers has increased from 15 to 26,000. The total waste received at the facility has only increased by 15,000. So again, it's maintained that percentage of the total of 30%. So about six, it's been increased by 14% over those years. So it's only gone up from 350 to 400 tons. So the amount of tonnage hasn't been too big of an issue. The amount of recycling material coming in has grown. So when you combine all that, it stresses the floor, tip floor. When we look at the number of trips, this is a different picture. In 2026, cash customers were only 39,000. It's jumped in 2021 to almost 64,000. So that's a significant increase. The overall trips went from 59, 60 to 89. That's about a 53% increase. The commercial trips are about 100 a day, but the cash customers have increased by 65%. So there's over 200 trips a day. And that goes back to what I was saying before is with this surge in the last few years of traffic, the self-haulers coming there, it has stressed traffic and circulation. Here's a graph of what it looks like. You can see the amount of tonnage coming in is gone up slightly in blue, but the gold line shows the dramatic increase in trips. So a little bit of overview. It serves as a primary material. This is an overview of the MRF. It serves as the primary facility for recovering all materials, the original equipment. Some of it's still there. The main line was in 1990. The CRC did expand the processing line and improved it, but it's now processing 67,000 tons of commercial and residential waste. In the regional study phase one, we did a full assessment of this with CRC. It's unquestionable that the equipment is outdated. It's not efficient. It still works. The cost to operate it is more because they need more labor on the market. It's not using the latest technology. And the line is processing a lot slower than if it were a major improvement in using more modern equipment. So a big issue right now is the negotiations for this relocation. That's my understanding. I haven't seen it in writing, but I understand that's what's intended. Any questions? Oh, let me go through the summary. The transfer station, when we did the regional study, we looked at the physical conditions. The transfer station has been well maintained. Even though it's an older building, it's got some damage to some of the columns that will need to be repaired, but it's something that can be done. The support facilities are in fair to good condition, but they're totally outdated. You can imagine they were built a long time ago. The employee center is very needs a modernization or expand it. The offices are fine, but again, they're outdated also. And then there's a number of the other outbuildings that need to be upgraded. And Bay 1, as I mentioned, is dedicated to handling the mixed yard debris and food waste. And we're already working with CRC and the county to figure a way, at least in the short term, to better handle that material, because if you haven't learned of it, there's a new state law that's asking local jurisdictions to recover or reduce the amount of food waste and organics going to the landfill by 2030. This we expect to grow. My understanding is the city of Ridgefield is also considering to moving to a commingled food waste, yard waste collection. So that's more of an immediate need, but we expect that to be looked at as part of the plan here. We do now, because of the traffic increases, it will back up into onto old Lower River Road. So more stalls are needed to unload the public. The new commercial scale should help, because the commercial trucks will be able to break the line and go across a separate scale. So that should help. But, again, this has to be seriously looked at to make sure traffic does not back up into the right of way. If the MRF is relocated, there will be approximately 45,000 square feet that could be used for repurposing for new programs. J.R. Miller is currently, as part of the phase two study, doing a whole new master plan for this facility, which will take into account the needs of this, and we'll come up with options. And eventually we will be adopting that master plan, which will identify the improvements, the schedule for those, and the capital needed.
Well, is a new site being looked at for the MRF yet, or is that still to come?
I can't speak to that. The county's not doing that, but CRC, it's basically the MRF is by contract CRC's responsibility and it's my understanding they desire to relocate and find a new site. That's all I can say. I think Derek's on here. Maybe he can speak to it.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that, Doug. The upgrades of the capital infrastructure system are part of the negotiation. So, we're looking at a new MRF and a fourth transfer station.
And a new MRF location.
Exactly.
So that master plan for West End facility is on hold until all that happens.
There's a lot of things riding on this negotiation, and if we're not successful there, we will be taking it out for a market test.
You've thrown a lot of numbers based on the number of bays and the volume and whatnot, and you have kind of the way it seems to be coming across is you've measured that. So my question is, in the negotiations, and I'll just use the example I've heard reference to 11 bays. Okay. So in the new MRF are you anticipating, based on the volume and the projected increase in the population, that we are going to, they would build a facility that would have 25 bays? Or, is that part of the negotiation?
I really can't get into the details, the substantive details of the negotiations.
Okay.
I will say that the county is going to be advocating for state of the art.
Yeah, but get to your question. I the number of bays won't necessarily increase for the MRF, and it would be if that material and that equipment is moved out. It would, looking at the facility, and that's the idea, look at the facility and how it can be retrofitted to better handle the transfer activities is what would be done.
And
it would look at making sure we have adequate storage, adequate bays for unloading, et cetera.
My example is if I can maybe modify it to be more specific. If right now Waste Connections is saying that they retrieve for remarketing 72% of the recycled material that's processed through the current MRF, if they build a new MRF, are they now saying they can give us 85%? Are they giving you any commitment to an improvement in the return on their process.
So a 10% residual rate is not uncommon in the industry.
Uh-huh.
Exactly what we're going to be designing for here is not anything that we've addressed at this point. Forward to a state-of-the-art facility, and I can't really, I mean, there's a whole design, build, operate function of this that we're just not prepared to discuss at the moment. All I can say is when the original facilities were built, I had the opportunity to meet off before West Van, and our new facilities were the pride of the region for quite some time. We contemplate a time where we'll all feel as proud of our upgraded facilities and our new facilities.
Was that 72% number because of inefficiencies at the MRF or because of contaminated material?
I'm not going to dig into those details right now. We can come back and talk about that a little bit later.
That's at the heart of it.
Also, on the siting, you just mentioned that Richfield wants to go to the food waste, and his bubble, that he said, was going to be where the city planner's growth is between Battleground and Richfield. It would appear to me that the burp has got to be up north.
That's a real logical, it's a very reasonable conclusion.
Because when you're playing with $5 gas,
the details aren't followed, and your calculation there is quite appropriate.
Let's finish that negotiation right here.
Closer to California. Can I clear up a couple things real quick?
Yes, go ahead.
So the 72% number, you're right. Of that, you can say about 2/3 of the material that is not processed by the MRF, not captured by the MRF, so call it 28-30%. 2/3 of that material is non-system material. So that's material that is not recyclable, that is wishful recycling, that shouldn't be in there to start with. So we're already at about, in the 90% range, plus or minus a little bit on capture rate. The intent would be to do a little bit better than that 90% rate in a new MRF. And then the other thing is Ridgefield, for clarification, is already on organics for their residential system. So that material is already coming into West Van, and it would be part of West Van. It wouldn't go with the MRF. It would stay at West Van. And then I think the third thing was also just there was conversations around bays and how many bays. Just remember, this is the new MRF is a commercial only facility. It's not for a residential drop off necessarily. There'll be like probably a drop off depot outside, but the bays within the facility are not as relevant as they are on the garbage needs at the transfer stations.
Thanks.
Thanks, Derek.
Okay. So let's talk about Washougal. This is the current facility. It's located in the port of Washougal. I think it's about 5 acres, 4 acres. The traffic comes into the scale complex. There's only one scale in, one scale out. This is only open to the public 3 days a week. All the garbage goes into this transfer station, either through doors here or a door on the south side. Transfer trucks pull in, drive in. It's a lift and load facility. There's no compactor here. This garbage used to be hauled to the, I'm not sure if it was rebaled or not, but it was hauled for barging. But then several years ago, Waste Connections purchased the Wasco County landfill in the Dalles. So this waste is not taken through the barge, but really is trucked to the Wasco landfill. There is a special waste handling facility. The recycling facility is out here where the public can enter, recycle. If they have garbage, they can go across the scales. If they don't, they can just leave. They can also use the HHW, which is open a few days a week, I believe. So this is the current site. And the condition is it's located, like I said, in the port of Washougal. The transfer station itself is only about 4,500 square feet. It basically serves the city of Camas and Washougal and some of eastern portion of the county. It receives about 125 to 135 tons a day. Waste is, like I said, transported to the Wasco County and Dalles. And the public are only coming into the facility on 3 days. It's not open any other day for the public. The traffic or the waste volume has increased slightly over the last 6 years, from 31,000 to 38,000. Not a lot. It's 23% increase. However, that building is pretty small, and when all the garbage comes in, and based on the, it can create a surge where there's limited space for hauling or storing. The biggest issue is looking at the number of public trips. Even though it's only open 3 days a week, you can see that public trips have doubled since 2016. And so total traffic has gone up. Most of the traffic is related to that public, going from 20,000 to 36,000. So over a six-year period, it's increased by 77%. The garbage trucks don't create too much of a public, surge. They can handle this waste, but when you got all these trips coming in using the same floor, it creates congestion. So all these trips, 190 on average per day on just 3 days. So it's very crowded. That's again, very similar to, West Van. You can see after 2019, I don't know if this was related to COVID or what, but all of a sudden there was a significant surge in traffic using the facility. The summary of the existing conditions, we did do an assessment of the facility. It's fair to good. There are some minor improvements that would help the operation that were identified in the regional study. But in summary, it's just not large enough to store the materials at times. With the increase in the self-haul, there's not enough stalls available to unload on those days that they're there. So the transfer station will need to be expanded, and just to handle the current waste quantities, but also to handle growth. And again, part of our phase two study is to develop some improvements for this facility.
Does the port have room for this to expand?
Well, in the phase one regional system study, we did some preliminary assessments. Yes, there is. There's room to do it. And the facility could be expanded to handle this traffic and provide more operating space. So the answer is yes.
You also said that the West Transfer Station would handle 30% of our total garbage. What percent of the 100% goes out of Washougal?
I think it's 5 to 10% at times. It's about 5 to 10%.
Expansion versus just expanding hours at the current facility. I think if we talk about expanding the days of operation, you're going to be spreading out your customer base over more days. It's only open 3 days a week. I don't know if that's part of the contract negotiations in terms of how many days a week are open, but before expanding the facilities, it makes sense to me to expand the hours. And then you're making those self-haul customers spread over a larger area. I know that the weekends are always going to be busier because that's when people have time, but is there any thoughts to that?
Yeah, the county has been, is, and I'm not sure where this is, in, whether it's part of negotiations. They're still evaluating it, but there is a proposal to expand the operating hours here and at West Van. But well, I don't know the status of that proposal. That was one of the considerations, yes, though.
In the, add a little more to that, Doug. There's a reasonable likelihood that you'll see more on that in the next couple of months. There's Yeah, that's about all I can say. So there's, you're likely to hear more on that soon.
Back in the presentation on phase one of the regional system study, it says that a concept plan for improvements and expansions has been prepared. That's just kind of on hold now until phase two is done, or?
We have materials prepared for that, but we're not quite ready to show. So, yeah, we have some tentative plans. There are no final decisions, but I don't know if Doug's going to get to it as part of this, but we have worked on a variety of scenarios. I think Alan, for example, suggested that the logical expansion point for a four transfer station would be to the north. We looked at several different scenarios. But it's a little premature to come back.
I was just talking about actually Washougal's.
Well, what I'm saying is we did that with all of the systems. So,
To follow up on what George said, we did very preliminary analysis. And just to say, is there space to do it? And came up with some general capital cost. They were not intended to be final because there was still information to be gathered and there were still the contract negotiations. But the intent of that work was to look at realistically, could these be expanded and what would be those options? So those have been somewhat defined in the sense of conceptually, but until negotiations get a little further along in how they will be implemented, then they will proceed with more details. And that was part of the phase two work all along.
Thanks, Doug.
Last facility is the central transfer and recycling facility. It is the busiest of all. It's located on Highway 503 or Northwest 117th Avenue, whatever you go by. It's located in this front half part of the site. And then in the back is another parcel that's owned by Waste Connections. Or holding company, I'm not sure exactly. That is used to handle staging of trailers and storage of bins. So it's not directly involved with the operation other than to handle support activities like that by CRC. When you look at the facility, all the traffic enters off of this site. Off of Highway 503, there's two scales and for entry, and then there's a dedicated scale for the commercial haul, as you can see. All the traffic circulates around the back of the transfer station, enters and leaves and is weighed out. Transfer trucks will travel around the back and back into this compactor and leave out the same exit. So it's very congested in this area. And there's a recycling drop off and HHW back here. It's the largest serves the largest area of the county. It's only on a little over 5 acres. It's open 7 days a week to all customers in the greater Vancouver region. It receives now between 800 and 1,100 tons a day, which is 66% of the county. So if you take this with the 30%, your Washougal's like 5%. I was probably a little bit high on 10. During periods, there's over 800 trips a day here. Waste is compacted in containers. And then they're transported over to the dock near the Port of Vancouver.
Doug, what was the design capacity for that facility?
Well, we've never been able to find it, but when it was designed, it was only handling 300 tons a day.
I think the permit's for 600 tons or something like that.
Yeah, it's.
I just want to give folks an impression of where we were, and I think between Derek's mention of 600 tons per day, and your mention, Doug, of what we were doing in the early days, I think that makes it really clear how significant the load on the facility is. That's all I wanted to illustrate. Thank you.
No, you're right. I can honestly say I've designed a lot of facilities. This facility and its arrangement is not designed to handle this, but we'll cover that. So historically, the customers or the waste load has gone up just from 2016 to 250,000 per year. So that's about a 17% increase. It's been a very steady increase. The thing to know is I live out here by this facility, and I can just tell you there's a huge amount of growth happening in our area. The trips again are more significant here. Again, the public trips have gone up about 24%, and that from 142 to 182. And the main problem is just the total number of vehicles coming here was 800 vehicles. Now, so one of the things that we did in the regional study, somebody brought up opening the other facilities for more days, is one consideration. This is the only facility that's open on Sunday. And perhaps that's, and on Sundays we're very busy there. Maybe that will help alleviate some of the traffic here, because the traffic does back up onto the street there. There is the, again, you're seeing this growth from the public here, just like we did in the other facilities. The waste volumes haven't increased significantly.
Doug, I should ask, this may be better for Derek, but I'll give you a first run. Tim asked how the new lanes were helping out there for traffic.
Oh, the new entrance? Yeah, so originally, before the new improvement, this left turn, you can see cars stacked up, and the right turn competed for one lane to get in. So these guys would have to wait for an opening. CRC has just completed the retrofit of this, and now the left turn lane has its own lane, and the right turn has its own lane. Derek, you want to comment on how it's working?
Yeah, it's better than it was. It's not perfect. I think we still see some crazy customer behavior out there, and but we still have a lot of concerns with people crossing 503, doubling up. We put a flagger out to try and help the zipper effect go a little smoother. The challenge we have is that if we don't do it exactly right, you can kind of see traffic piling up north or southbound pretty quick. So you gotta put somebody out there knowledgeable about how they're moving traffic through. So it's a step in the right direction. It's not the final step, though.
Hey, Derek, now trucks or vehicles leaving, right, can only take a right out.
Correct. Yeah, we had that before, but people would just run over the pylons we put out there or anything else and make this left turn anyway. So I think they're getting better at it. It's a little more formal now. But they'll still find a way to make a left turn and do something crazy.
So the scale capacity is an issue, because even though those two lanes come in, there's still only one lane to go across the scale. So the queue area here is they do have some double stacking over here in two lanes, but they have to then merge to get across the scale. So that is a problem when you got that many cars. But that's not the only issue. Cars will come around, and they have to wait to get in to dump. And then there's also a very short lane for cars to get out onto this. So it comes to a total capacity. There's not enough stalls. This queue lane is not large enough. And because there's not and this exit stacking can back traffic up. Plus, you can see all this transfer trucks have to come out the same entrance. When they do, that blocks this traffic temporarily. So there's a lot of congestion to handle this. It wasn't designed to handle this flow. That's bottom line. Just to give you an illustration, here's the incoming, will stack up waiting for a stall. The garbage has, you know, it can load out 870 tons in 12 hours. But when you got 1,000 tons, you still got to operate over 12 hours, and you got to have stacking for that garbage. So there's just not enough stalls in here. There's when you count the fact that the garbage trucks and the public have to use this side, sometimes the garbage haulers can use this side also, but there's just not enough stalls. And if this, and what happens is when these trucks come around to get out, they have to make that hair per turn, but this compactor truck has to come in and get weighed out. So there's a lot of congestion there. And again, just bottom line, it wasn't designed to handle this much flow. So there's been no major improvements. The facility is in good condition. Waste management or Waste Connections done a good job of taking care of the building. Gets cleaned. There are some minor improvements, but nothing. The building doesn't need to be torn down. Certainly can be enhanced. The CRC has just finished the ingress, egress improvements. But we still need additional improvements to make sure there's no queuing out off-site. It's improved. And it just needs to be expanded not only to handle existing, but to also manage growth. In summary of looking at all existing conditions, all these facilities were built. The two facilities were built in 92. Growth has been 167 growth in the tonnages. The structures are in pretty good shape. There's just been no improvements to expand them. Each facility is receiving more than was intended on the capacity. Improvements and expansions are needed. If the Smurf is relocated, that helps the opportunity to repurpose West Van for either food waste or other facilities or other operations. And as part of our regional study, we will be completing a CIP for these facilities. So that ends my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any more questions.
So with Central being very locked in footprint-wise, what kind of expansion can we be expecting in terms of throughput there, just given, I know that we have that back area, but I don't know if that's available for expansion or if that's off limits. Is it possible to even make that location work?
We've developed a series of 3 to 4 options. The answer to your question is, if that was to be considered use, you could expand the facility there. It would require, I think, a zoning change on that property, and it would require, to go through a full hearing. Keep in mind that the transfer station now has, when it was first built, it was pretty rural. There was nothing next to it. Now there's, apartments and houses. These apartments are here. They're showing under construction. Back in the back here, there's a whole new housing development. So the nature of the community has changed. That's not to say, I can say for our firm, we've expanded facilities in areas like this, and we've developed some plans. As George brought up, another option is to build a new facility and a new location. And part of the rationale there would be maybe it'd be more remote from residential and maybe have better access than coming off a major highway. So those are the options that are to be considered. And we've done some preliminary analysis, but that's still where it is.
Then when is the decision going to be made? I mean, if looking at time, if we're talking the contract to renegotiating, if I understand it right, without the confidential side, it's a 10-year contract with an option to renew, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so if we're looking out 15 years and we're looking at this facility, and I've used that facility as well and used that road as well, if the growth rate goes up out there, if you can't get that back portion so that you can at least get access off another road and divide the traffic and get it off 117, you got to find another facility in 15 years. I mean, why throw good money after bad if you've recognized this level of a problem
There's always value when you have an asset like this located in a place like this. There's always value for that facility. The likelihood of abandoning that operation is very small. However, adding a fourth facility can relieve the pressure here and add additional capacity, design that to your need. Part of that would be taking some stress off of this operation and adding additional capacity overall. So you're looking at a pretty good sized facility. In terms of the answer to your question, the negotiations include the likelihood of a capital improvement plan that Doug has told you that they have prepared, and that would be part of what we would be talking about for you without getting into the nitty-gritty of it. And if that doesn't work out, we'll be in a re-procurement and a capital planning process, and we'll find another way to get there. Our hopes is to closure and the negotiations, and then we'll be able to come back with you soon and share with you more details.
Is there a part of everything? It seems like all the pressure is on the facilities. Is there any aspect of the renegotiation that is a possible upgrade, modernization of the equipment that is being used to pick up? I mean, we live in an area that we just lost 50% of our recycle pickup because we're going to get picked up every other week under recycle. We just started this week.
It's less frequent, but it's comparable collection volume.
Oh, I'm not concerned about the volume. I personally, I'll just say from observation, it's not significant that way. But the thing that makes me wonder is, when you talk about all these other things that we're trying to capture, potentially recycle, is there any discussion in this 15-year period of renegotiation that where the actual pickup and our education of the consumers that we would be doing more sorting and providing, if we provide more service curbside, would that reduce trips,
so the
pressure on the facility?
Both collection contracts are managed entirely separately. The city of Vancouver manages their own collection contract. Most of the municipalities are now operating under their own separate contracts. The county is responsible for oversight of the services and mostly through contracts for the recycling and yard waste pickup and the garbage service contracts are regulated by the Utilities and Transportation Commission.
They didn't realize there was that division. Sorry for the mixing apples and oranges.
No, it's okay. It's a relevant question. And really, the limiting factor right now in terms of expansion and improvements in the collection services is the transfer element. There are only so many ways that you can route these products, and they all require consolidation before you move on. I mean, we'll never be a place where we'll be dumping, directing collection trucks on the recycling side directly to processing, you know, to it's always going to require some intermodal status. And so until we create capacity here, we're really limited on what we're doing here. Tremendous amount of pressure right now to expand food waste processing, both from our customers and from the state. And there's going to be more pressure coming, and hopefully a little more capital too. Okay. And we're trying to figure out, you know, the best ways to do that right now. So that's the real limiting factor. We've upgraded a lot of those contracts before. We can again, and we're in the process of doing some work on those right now. The recent changes that you're referring to, I think are a good example. If you have more concerns about that, we can talk about it later. I want to take advantage of this time.
I'm sorry to cross over.
No,
I realized I crossed over.
It's a very relevant question. And notice that we did things a little bit out of order in terms of what we brought to you tonight, but we've got a lot of new membership here. Some of the folks here have seen this before, but it's important because of where we are with the regional systems plan, with the comp plan, with the negotiations, that all of you understand this, and that's why we brought this forward. And Michael, you're among, you know, our newest addition. This is your opportunity to get introduced to this material. Your questions are completely relevant. We wouldn't have you hold back at all.
Another thing they need to do, and I've done it, is go out and see these places. Like, I've been to Dirt Huggins twice. And, you know, that's a phenomenal visit.
We can arrange some tours. Maybe another meeting you can, or maybe even tonight, you can arrange a prioritized list, and we'll work on some field trip planning.
If Dirt Huggers continue to, in the facility there, continue this onrush of food waste and branches and leaves?
They were recently bought out, and I assume that the buyer is bringing more capital to the operations. Derek might have more information about that. All that's relevant.
The last time I was there, there was no problem. They're selling their stuff.
Yeah.
So the product was good, and everybody knew it. So all they had to do is make it.
Yeah. On the organic side, it's a whole new list of players that I'm not familiar with. There were other players when I was here, but last time I was working in this industry was in the Puget Sound, a whole different set of players up there. Jim, you had a question?
Yeah, the Dirt Huggers facility has, they have the space, they just would have to build out additional pads to process the material. And I haven't talked to them for a little while, but our conversations have always been, surrounding supply agreements. So if you provide them with a contract that guarantees them the volume, then they can obviously get the financing, to build the infrastructure. And like you guys said, they have no problem selling their material. They really have enjoyed the partnership with the material that comes out of Clark County so far. The quality of the material we produce is really good for our program. So that's been nice.
Thank you, Derek. One of the constraints that we have to deal with is when you involve food waste to meet regulatory requirements, you have to tip on a covered floor. And so the pads that they use out there for environmental protection work fine on the yard waste. When you start adding food waste, it becomes a little more difficult. And I am not current on their capacity, but Derek, offers at least one possible solution. But as far as I know, we're not actively talking with them about any of that kind of stuff at the moment. And again, Tim,
it's different topics.
So getting to some of the subject matter you're talking about is something to keep in mind here. These transfer stations, when they were designed, were primarily bring the garbage in, load it up, and get it out. And over the years, with new regulations, new goals set by the county, city, more and activities are here. The The facilities have become more than just a transfer site. As you can see, there's the HHW, the recycling drop-off, and the recycling drop-off of added materials. Then there's a separation of the organics. Then there's separation of the C&D. So it's gotten all facilities, and this is not just Clark County. This is why Clark County is just it's their time to look at their facilities and update them. But, you know, in Seattle, they've had to update every one of their transfer stations built in the 60s and 70s. And they've spent a lot of money doing that. And we've been involved with it, so I know that. City of Tacoma. So this is just a time that has come and due. But realize that one of our goals in looking at the facilities of the future is to better handle and manage these materials. So it's the opportunity to look at how do we retrofit, relocate some of this stuff, improve site circulation, and make these services more efficient, sort of, and not just for today, but also looking at the future. So it is a comprehensive look at not just adding buildings, but how do we handle and manage the materials in the space we have.
Impression that I got from the presentation is that these needs are pretty immediate. We have three transfer stations to be upgraded and potentially one new one to be built. Financing, when you're doing all that stuff at one time, and getting that paid for it can be a real challenge.
And so you can understand why negotiations might be a little tricky.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know you're talking negotiation, but eventually it all trickles down to rate payers.
No, well, we'll just leave it there for me for right now. I don't know if Derek wants to add anything, but I think both sides see opportunity.
Yeah, and so I guess the question for Derek or for you or for Doug would be, is that true? Yes, we're going to, as soon as, you know, whenever the time comes, everything's going to happen at one time. Or no, we can stage things out, plan things out over a 10-year period or something like that. Or are we going to be working on four sites at one time?
I assume it's going to be a little bit of a mix, okay? I can't get into the details of the CIP yet.
It's a little early. Yeah.
Well, I could say this. We had a preliminary schedule of the CIP. There are things that can be prioritized, and there are things that can wait. The worst thing we want to do is spend good money after bad money. So that's the part of the reasoning to do these master plans is to make sure we don't make a sudden move to spend $1 million to do something, then realize, hey, that we put something in the wrong place or we didn't do anything. So that's the reason for it. And but I would say that, you know, CRC has been able to adapt and operate these facilities. Are they stressed in the sense of performing it or the facilities more efficient? No, they are stressed, but they do a good job of managing it and mitigating to the extent that they can at the site. It requires some extra manpower sometimes. It requires some not as best, the best of customer service simply by waiting too long and so on. So some of that will have to linger while things get done. So not everything has to be done at once, but I think there'll be an opportunity to prioritize and make sure that everything gets done within a reasonable time frame.
If you don't mind my asking, is there an aspect of this long-term plan that is targeting market opportunities where we could get a higher yield on what we're capturing and sorting for recycle in terms of a higher market return? And is that a revenue source that's considered?
Derek, do you want to try to speak to that?
So that is a complex question because I really probably can't speak to it just because of the nature of the negotiations and everything else. So I'll leave it at that. We're always trying to improve and do better, and we have great, you know, vendors and brokers in the system that yield the best prices possible for the materials that we recover. And I think a new MRF will certainly improve overall yield. But how we get there and kind of some of the dynamics of that, is, I probably shouldn't talk too much about it.
Well, I could speak in more general terms. The recycling markets were significantly disrupted with the China sword in 2016. And the result of that has been, the paper and fiber that used to go to China is now still staying in the States. And the plastics that used to go over there are no longer, like the 3-7s, no longer have a viable market. But the high-end products, the HDPE, the PET, plastics, metals was depressed for a while. They're starting to come up, and the paper and fiber markets in the U.S. are getting better. So as far as we can see from our just preliminary analysis, they're doing a good job of getting the best market prices. But again, they're in competition with the better quality materials, and certainly if new equipment's put in, there could be opportunity to increase, that market. But again, it's very complex. I concur with Derek. It's hard to speak to that. The market prices fluctuate just like the stock markets. So you can appreciate that.
A good example is our cardboard right now goes to the Georgia Pacific Mill in Toledo, Oregon. And they consistently reference the material coming out of West Van as some of the best material coming out of a MRF environment. Certainly you can get cleaner products from other customers that's not coming from a curbside MRF sort. But of the material that we sort and sell, it's considered a premium product. But we're completely beholden to the market. And in the last 90 days, that material has dropped by $90 a ton in value. So that is almost a 50% reduction in the overall value of that material, which we can't control because there's, limited end markets for that material, and so it is a commodity, and it's dictated by whatever the market will pay. But so you can do the best job you can to yield it and clean it up, but we're still going to get $90 a ton less for the material.
In my career, I've seen the price swing from 40 to 160 bucks a ton on old corrugated pretty frequently. And I've been out of business for 7 years, so I expect these days we've seen it. And because of the China sword stuff, I expect we've seen it swing even further both directions. Derek can probably speak more precisely.
Yeah, we're going to hit that 40 number. We're going to hit that 40 number in October and maybe even down to zero by the end of the year. So it's a weird market right now. But, cardboard, like George said, has been up $200 plus a ton, and we're going to be zero on it. It will have no positive value anymore by the end of the year. That'll change over time, but the demand for the product is just slumping right now, so it could go to zero here shortly.
Those are the kinds of issues that everybody has to contend with. I have a hot off the press announcement. We were talking tours. I got an email from one of our colleagues, Sarah, who runs the outreach and education program, indicating that another one of our staff members is organizing a tour of Dirt Huggers for the program volunteers. And I just got an offer to include Slack on that. I don't know when they're planning it, but I see a lot of nods. I will consider that sufficient consent and add you to the distribution list on those arrangements if it's your pleasure.
Thank you.
Just as the side of Dirt Huggers, when I was there, they have a final sift that they have to put the materials through before the bag it or put it out of the pile. And they have a magnet across the top of this thing. And you look at the magnet, and there's spoons and forks and knives. And they say, they never have a problem with silverware.
I have
not been very good at keeping an eye on the screen tonight. It seems like Kim may have had something she wanted to say. Kim, are you still around?
Yeah, thank you. Also, I recommend a tour maybe of some facilities, both as was mentioned by Doug, the North and South Seattle transfer stations are quite beautiful, and they're right in the heart of an urban area or urban areas, and I highly recommend those as a potential tour site to see the possibilities of what could happen here in Clark County or what we should be visioning. But I just wanted more clarity on, because I was getting kind of confused. So the one-year extension, that required capital improvements, did it not? And if so, what were those improvements? And then I have additional questions, too.
So, Kim, I don't know what the original scope of that was. The draft contracts we're negotiating over now do address the CIP with expanded and new facilities, including MRF capacity. I don't know that I should get into more details at the moment. So I don't know exactly what everyone expected, but we do have a capital plan included in the draft contract.
The draft
and the one year extension did not include a capital requirement.
Okay, and then I've read in the presentation there's an operating contract, and then somebody mentioned a 15-year extension. I'm just kind of confused what's what.
Yeah, can we come back to that in another month?
I would like that information sooner than later.
I would ask you to check in with Julie on that, please.
Okay.
Did you have more questions, Kim?
No, I just wanted more clarity and ensure that we're having a fair RFP process. It's something that I know City Council has been, trying to make sure. And so I'm trying to represent my council. It's my role here. And I know that we've scrutinized other things that have come before us. And so I just want to make sure that I'm representing that interest and that we are doing a transparent RFP process when it comes to all of our contracts where the city is involved through our interlocals, as you know.
Yeah. Are there any other more questions for Doug from online people or people here? I have one more question, Doug, and kind of along what Kim had mentioned at first. Is there any other facilities you would recommend that we could maybe look at in terms of what is a model transfer center, in today's current age or MRF look like, so that maybe some members could?
Well, you could go, if you go up north to those facilities, the city of Tacoma, rebuilt their system, so that's a good facility. They are at an old landfill, but they do have apartments, Home Depot. I mean, the surrounding area is pretty, but they got a pretty good buffer. As Kim mentioned, the city South Transfer Station, it's more in an industrial area. The Seattle North facility was reconstructed on site in the Waterford District. So anyhow, it's right in the town. We did the layout for it, and we worked with the neighbors for over a year to lay out that facility and get their concurrence on what the facility would look like, how it would be arranged, and then it was built by the city. So it is a an example of how the city of Seattle worked very closely with their neighbor, with the neighborhood, to rebuild the facility and mitigate many of the issues that the public had.
I worked at Seattle Public Utilities during this time period. So Doug's characterization of the South facility is appropriate in that it is in an industrial area, but it does have residential areas in close proximities. Seattle put a lot of amenities into that facility to address neighborhood concerns. And the Wallingford facility is kind of a wonder to behold because it is right in the middle in a sort of geographically depression, but it is right in the middle of a high-end residential neighborhood. And I mean, you literally only have to walk a block or two in any direction. You're walking through million-dollar plus homes. So it's a tribute to what you can get done if you can relate well and pay attention to local the local community. They're both facilities are a bit of a wonder to behold.
So what are the practical issues that you deal with there? Noise,
yep.
Odor, dust,
yep.
Traffic.
Sure.
Smell.
Even the perception.
You know.
Yeah, just that, and that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, why anybody would buy a house in a neighborhood that clearly has a solid waste facility and then complain about it later? It's always been difficult for me to understand. But you're exactly right. That is one of the concerns that people feel is the impact on a neighbor like that on their property values. It's something we all worry about.
You know, I'm sure it'd be quite interesting to go to these places. When I think about after watching Doug's presentation, it's a bit of an oversimplification. The part of this is really about, it's about moving traffic, right?
Yeah.
And so if I'm walking around on a site, I don't know if I'm going to figure out what their problems were and how they solved their problems. It would be fascinating to have a little presentation. Here's what it looked like. Here's what our problems were. Here's what it looks like now. It's been very successful. These are the things you want to think about when doing your own site.
I'm pretty confident that I can reach out to former colleagues and put something together like that. And I also think that as we move forward with this work, there will be support for giving SLAC an opportunity to see some of these facilities. And so I think we'll start local, because that's the more immediate need. And as we move forward, we'll look for opportunities to get you more exposure to what could be. While I was with the city of Seattle, we renegotiated MERV services, and I haven't had a chance to see the state-of-the-art redesigned MERV facility, which is something that's on my list of things to do. Sorry about that. Derek, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, not at all. I was just going to say, and you also have to take into account, tipping fees in the area, in the market area. I don't know what they are in Seattle. Do you have an idea in general what they are?
Not at the top of my head, but I'm pretty confident you can say higher.
Yeah. I think they're upwards of $200 a ton. So, I mean, you gotta understand, include the economics of it, and that gets passed on to the end user, of course, at the end of the day. So.
We'll also add quickly, Derek, that in the first 3 or 4 or 5 year openers for that, their disposal contract, they negotiated decreases in the tip fee.
210 to 200 is pretty good.
Well, there's.
I'd take that all day long. You guys would have a Taj Mahal.
There's the tip way at the landfill, and there's the tip pay in the station. But your point is well taken. And we have good tip rates here. We, you know, and we can bring some of that information back at some point. We have some regional comparisons. We don't have a lot to complain about in terms of our tip fees at transfer stations. They're good. Did I recover okay for you, Darren?
What's that?
Thank you. Perfect.
Okay. One more comment I had was, I know we've been talking about our existing facilities, but in that same conversation, we're talking about future facilities. And one thing that's kind of I like to think about is like resiliency with our facilities. So, for example, we've had multiple fires at our facilities. Let's say one of these facilities is damaged by fire or earthquake into the future. How does our capacity, you know, in our other facilities come into play? Are we building excess capacity for those sort of unforeseen circumstances where we lose a West Van for an extended period of time because it can't handle anything because it had a big fire? Just something from my industry perspective is, being a firefighter, I've seen lots of garbage fires. They're not good when they happen in facilities like that. So thinking about that going forward in terms of just unforeseen circumstances is something to think about. If we lost one, it'd be, we think central transfer is bad now. Imagine being down at another facility, and something to put into consideration.
Resiliency and transparency are the chief talking points of the city and county, among others, of course, but those are a part and central to the negotiations.
Okay. Any last following questions for Doug before we move on to public comment?
Thank you, Doug, for the presentation.
Well, thank you. It was nice. I'm glad that I meet all the new players as well as some of the old, seeing you again. So look forward to further presentations and discussion with you on how we can shape this system.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
And give this a copy.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Moving on to public comment. Do we have any public besides SWAC members and staff? Okay. One thing for public comment, I'd be remiss to not mention this, but it is Alan's last meeting tonight.
Bring in the cake.
What? Yeah. Alan is leaving us. So, Alan, how long have you been on SWAC for?
11 years.
11 years. I think you are currently our longest serving member. Yeah. So, a big thank you for your service to SWAC. I'm sure you've seen a lot of interesting presentations.
Really? Thank you
very much, Alan. I enjoy your greener pastures.
Oh, yeah. Well, I still volunteer a lot, but this was one too much.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the monthly meeting makes it a little.
Yeah, we're in a grind right now for sure. So any words of wisdom for us?
Like I said before, be sure to get out and volunteer. I even went through them. They did a study or two of the recycle bins, and we did that. Get involved with it and as much as you can and ask questions, because you're going to, you know, this is all different from what we did in our first life. And I still have questions too, as you can tell. And I'm always interested in, I always figure that a trash bin is just a free garage sale, you know, so whatever. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. We appreciate your service.
Absolutely.
All right. Can we get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Awesome. All right. I almost second for his last act as a SWAC member. All right. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate y'all being here. I know it was a quick turnaround, so thanks.